Yes, Sam?
Hi.
Hi!
Yeah, that's what I got. How are you?
I'm great. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Grunt Osai Mulvey. And me, yeah, Becky.
This may not be the day to ask me anything at all. I'm just not in the place for it. But I'm ready to have a little bit of fun after this week. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey. Our phone number is 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number, toll-free nationwide. Joining me, as usual, is Becky was trying to figure out what to do with the guttural noises I was making and sort of already brought herself in. So how was your summer, spring break weirdness thing?
Spring break is coming to an end, and I'm ready to go back to the corner of the living room where I have my remote mobile office set up.
Yeah, it's fun because you had your break, so you spent all your time in Becky's, but the part of the house I think of as Becky's nook.
Okay.
And now spring break is over and you're going to go back to Becky's nook.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yep.
Yeah, except instead of watching stuff on Netflix, you're watching stuff on Zoom.
Yeah. It's interesting.
The future, ladies and gentlemen. And joining us by remote is Robert Ray. He's been a frequent guest on Ask an Atheist over the years. He's a humanist celebrant, podcaster, father, and electrician who was recently back to the U.S. after spending a year in Antarctica. How you doing today?
I am good. How about yourself?
I'm all right. I'm actually doing a little bit better than I'm making. All right, let me explain how my week went to the two of you. I mean, I'm explaining it to Becky pro forma because she was here for it, but you haven't heard. So I have been using this our polite post-apocalyptic time here to spruce up and get the radio station sort of a little bit more where I want it to be before we build out the studio, because all the hunt for and build out project of the studio just sort of crashed and burned once being outside wasn't really in the cards anymore. In fact, our last couple of people who were going to show us spaces just completely blanked on us, and we haven't heard from them since. I hope they're alive. This week, I pushed a new version of some software that I wrote to manage a lot of the station functions when it's not being operated under control from here. And so I did a lot of testing for it. I have this little test rig I made out of a Raspberry Pi with a nice laser cut case, and all the software was working great. And then, because I'm a system administrator, and that's the way I do things, I wait for midnight to push my changes, and it's supposed to be, I had it set up so that the transition from one version of the software to another would happen right at the top of the hour. There'd be a little bit of a gap, the system would quit, the other system would start itself up, nobody would be the wiser, and everything would be fine. And the second time I did this update for another radio station, it worked. But for my radio station, it didn't work at all. It did kind of work in that it loaded up an ID and an episode of a show, but then the midnight synchronization kicked in, and there was a hereto undiscovered bug in the synchronization stuff, and it blew away not only my entire library of content at the transmitter site, but its backup as well.
Oh, wow.
And that was about 70 gigabytes of audio of lost of like MP3s. I'm not talking like waves or CDs. I'm talking MP3s and Opus files. So like
that is a lot of data.
A lot of data. And the internet connection, because it doesn't need to be very much at the transmitter site, is as anemic as I could make it to keep costs down. So now I have to figure out how to transfer 80 gigabytes of data from the internet to this transmitter site over basically a soda straw, and so I'm trying to figure out what happens, and then the show ends and there's just silence on the radio station. Dead air, just nothing. The automation system says, hey, yeah, there's no audio here, I'm done, later skaters. Like it should, you know, you don't want it running if it's not doing anything. And so it's like, well, if this were before, if this were the before four time, I'd be screwed. I'd have to turn off the transmitter until we were ready to go. It'd be about, it would be down for as long as it was down. But now, because we've transitioned, we've turned this studio into a point of control for the radio station, I just fired up this studio and we started talking and playing shows and doing what we were supposed to do for, what the automation systems were supposed to do. And so I'd come in here, we'd say some dumb things, I'd play a show, and then I'd run back into my lab and like try to figure out where 8 hours. I went to bed at like 9:30, and I was tired when I started this maintenance window. I have a feeling you know that feeling, Robert, but
I do.
Yeah. And so that just put my sleep schedule, which is barely a schedule at the best of days, just completely off. And yeah.
Well, something tells me that Robert might have some familiarity and experience with anemic internet connections.
I thought so. So we actually did record that outage, and we're going to toss it up on the Patreon, I think, this week, because I haven't updated the Patreon in a while. So, I imagine as somebody who also, you know, works on much more hardcore infrastructure than I do. And you did it at a cool place. So,
a cold place anyway.
Yes. Totally unintended. That's amazing. Go Sam. So what brought you to McMurdo in Antarctica?
I am an electrician and I was looking for work, and a recruiter called me one day and asked me if I wanted to go, and, you know, took a couple days to make a decision. And I said, sure, why not?
Just easy as that.
I mean, yeah. Never been off the continental United States, so yeah, let's go to Antarctica.
That was a big leap there. You were there actually for a little over a year, right?
396 days.
Not like anyone was counting.
No, I was never counting. I did not start counting down at like 300 days left, so...
Well, initially you weren't going to be there for more than 300 days at all, and you kind of extended your stay. Yeah. So there must have been something awesome about it.
It is the most amazing and frustrating place you could ever live.
Amazing and frustrating.
Cold.
Yeah.
It is cold, but it is so beautiful. Like, because I live in Montana in the middle of the mountains, and they have nothing on the transantarctic mountain ranges. Just, they are so huge.
So you can actually, from what I see from pictures, it's always like, feels like it's near the coast or on ice or something like that. And I didn't know that I didn't know the mountains were visible. Shows you what I know.
They are very visible. They're huge. We have, in fact, Mount Discovery is the most prominent mountain down there.
Wow. Okay.
So your Facebook updates were always coming kind of a day early. I loved seeing that you would wish people happy birthday seemingly a day before it was anyone's actual birthday. So you were getting those notifications. Oh, it's Sam's birthday. Oh, it's Becky's birthday before the rest of Facebook land would. Does that mean that you were on Australia, New Zealand time?
Yep, we were on New Zealand time. So I was 20 hours ahead of my home time.
Wow. Okay.
Did they just pick it because it was like the nearest time zone to civilization, or was it arbitrary?
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe that's the reason. I don't know exactly why I didn't get that far into my history.
Because where at me, I go, GMT. Because, I mean, it's not like you have to follow... I don't know if that's necessarily true. It's not like you have to follow any particular circadian rhythm, right?
Not really. I mean, they try to get it close, but with either all dark or all sun, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
So what were some of the living conditions like?
Basically, it's like living in an upgraded mining camp. The buildings are decent. They're mostly warm. If you're there during the winter, you get your own room. If you're there during the summer, you have to share your room, just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
The food is served in a galley, you know, cafeteria style, and you know it's a big community down there. So there's about we're seeing 1,000 and 1,200 in the summer, and during the winter we had 138 this year.
138 people for what, 6 months or so? That's a very small number of people. I mean, we're all kind of suffering here saying, oh, I can only see the person in my immediate household right now. But I think for 6 months, only 138 people, that would test a lot of folks. How did you kind of get through that?
Luckily, I'm pretty introverted, so it worked out rather well.
Yeah, Becky, you're a school teacher, so you see thousands of children per year. And here I am thinking, do I see 138 people in a year?
Okay, fair. I see 1,500 people every day during normal circumstances.
Yeah, because I mean, for me, it's the show folks, it's the station folks, and then camp. And camp, I think, is what pushes it over 138 and into like the 250 range. But
So here's the weird thing about the 138 people. I knew all of them, but I rarely saw them every day.
Huh.
It was the weirdest thing. Well, because we still had shift work. We had the night shift and the day shift, even during the winter. So roughly a quarter of the people worked nights.
Right. So you had, you know, stations to keep and stuff like that. So
Right. Everybody
was pretty well spread out through the facility, I would presume.
Right. And there's some people that worked, you know, in buildings that I never went to. I mean, I went to all the buildings, but because I'm an electrician, I ended up going to all of them. But, you know, I don't spend a lot of time in there. I'm there to do a particular task and get out.
Right.
So Antarctica always seems like this very romantic kind of place in terms of not like a sexy kind of romance, but just the sweeping natures of everything.
So adventure romance, not.
Yes.
Not weird novel romance.
No.
Well, not weird novel, but you know what I mean.
No, I'm not going to ask about your romantic life in in Antarctica, but just the sheer. Yes, size and romance of the place. I want to know about things like in that adventure context. I mean, did you encounter wildlife? Did you have problems that you had to MacGyver something together because supplies were low?
Yes and yes, all the time. as far as wildlife, there's penguin, seals, and these horribly annoying seagulls we call skuas, which are like giant seagulls.
Okay.
But they're smart and they're aggressive.
Oh, God. So, I just need to connect this. Get out of here. I'm connecting this thing. I have no food.
They have discovered what human food looks like, and they like it. So.
Okay. And so when you're out when you're out fixing something up, I'm presuming like they're coming around going, got any food? Any food?
Yeah, they're.
Do you have any food?
Yeah, pretty much.
I love it.
Yeah. Skuas, so they're scavenger birds, obviously. Mm-hmm. But penguins are just annoying as hell.
Really?
They like to stand in the middle of the road.
Oh, so they're annoying.
Like inconvenient.
Yeah, they're inconvenient is what they are. Because we can't shoo them off the road. It would break the Antarctic Treaty because that would be, I believe it's called molesting the wildlife.
Oh, so there's actually things that you can't interfere with them at all. I mean, what?
No, unless you are a scientist with permission from the NSF. That's the only time you can interfere with them at all.
Wow. So what do you do if you got a penguin that refuses to move from the middle of your road? Do you just make
a
new road?
We can't make new road because of the way the ice. So if I'm going out to like the ice runways, we're driving literally on the ice and the road itself is packed ice. It's packed snow.
Right.
And if you were to drive off of that packed ice, you would get into the drifted snow and you would sink.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Like bumper deep sink and you're not getting out.
Oh, so it's okay. So it would be kind of quicksandy if you got off the packed ice then.
Yes, which did happen to us one time.
Oh, dear.
Oh, what were the circumstances of that?
We were taking down Williams Field, which is one of the runways. We were doing this back in March. And the guys we had one of the big vans, four-wheel drive with the giant tires. And we were following one of the guys with a Mat Track, which is this tracked four-wheel drive truck.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got the snowmobile tracks for tires. And the guy driving the Mat Track forgot we were behind him. He just started trucking off just wherever, because they can go wherever because of the tracks.
Right.
So the guy driving didn't realize he had come off the road, so we ended up bumper deep in the snow.
Oh, yikes. That guy must have felt terrible. Oh, geez, I can't believe I just did that.
I think I posted a video of that.
Oh.
With the quad track pulling us out.
Oh, okay. I think I remember that one now. Yeah. So, okay. I'm a big fan of hacks, as you know. and you said you had to do some creative tinkering to get things to work. I'm curious as the kind of stuff you have to do to keep McMurdo going.
Well, a lot of the buildings are pretty old, and a lot of the materials and things that fit those buildings no longer exist. So we have to MacGyver roughly half of the stuff that we do to make it work, especially electrically, because some of that stuff is so old and is starting to fail that it is causing major issues on the station.
Okay. Is there one you could specifically name just to give me a for instance?
So we have this building called Mac Ops, and it's our McMurdo Operations Center, which is the brain center of the station. Mm-hmm. And it's got a generator backup and a UPS system.
Okay.
But it's built in 1971, so the electrical system is also 1971. And it's got the weirdest automatic transfer switch I've ever seen. It works sort of like a camshaft.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's weird. And I've seen a lot of ATSs. But we were having some power issues. We had a lot of power bumps. And during one of those power bumps, it froze in the middle. Like, it burnt the actuator, completely fried it. So I had neither generator or normal power going.
Right.
So we had to bypass all of that really quickly with some inventive ways. We used what are called Polaris lugs, and we had to tie everything back together. But we had limited time because the UPS there is also from 1971, and it had about 90 minutes worth of time left on it.
Yikes.
I'm picturing this red numbered clock counting down, you know, tick, 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 beep, beep. You know, like I understand that there's no explosives involved, but under that kind of pressure.
And then huge banks of open lead acid batteries and stuff like that. It's got to be. I mean, is that the battery technology they're using for the UPSs?
Yes, that's the old battery technology, which we were in the process of replacing when all this went down. We were bringing in a whole new UPS, and we were in the middle of running all the pipes and wires for that.
Yeah.
And we just hadn't finished it yet. We were like a week away from finishing. Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
And then the one part you need to function the entire time just burns. And it's,
oh, yeah.
And it's this unique camshaft action. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble even visualizing how precisely that would work, but that's amazing.
It's interesting. That's the sort of stuff we dealt with.
Well, that certainly meets my adventure quotient, I think.
Yeah. That was just one day.
Yeah. that was what I was like. And then you have to go to, and then, you know, your shift ends or the problem is solved. In that case, it's not really a question of shift. It's a question of outage. And then you go to bed and you get up and you got to do it all over again. But right. I mean, McMurdo's a research station. So there's a lot of research stuff. Did you get to help out in research? Did you do any cool science stuff while you were down there?
I didn't personally do any science. I got to talk to some of the scientists, and we did assist them a little bit here and there, say like with the setting up of the aquariums and things like that, and getting all that dialed in so that they don't lose their fish in the middle of an outage like we had.
Yeah.
So during the rest of the time that you're not on duty, I'm assuming that there's some kind of entertainment or recreation, things like that. What do you do for fun, especially with only 138 people?
Well, there are two bars down there, so that's one thing. We do have one of the bars has a full stage and DJ booth and all this stuff. So we did karaoke and live bands and dance parties and stuff like that going on.
Wait, live bands? Do they like fly in folks from New Zealand, or are these the participants?
These are the residents.
Okay.
Yeah, some of them are really, really good. Some of them are really, really bad.
I seem to recall you did a couple shifts as a DJ while you were down there.
I did. There is an actual FM radio station down there. It's called Ice Radio 104.5.
Nice.
I actually did a weekly show for the entire time I was down there.
Cool. What kind of stuff did you do on the station?
I played dance music on Saturday nights.
Neat.
Fun. So the two bars, right? Is there like a rivalry to like folks, do the scientists go to one and then maybe the support staff go to another? Is there, what kind of mixing is there between either the bars or the galley, you know, cafeteria?
There in general is an egalitarian society down there. Everybody realizes that everybody is necessary. So there's a lot of mixing in between the different classes, I guess you could call it. The only time when people tend to separate is in like the galley, and it feels kind of like the high school cliques. Everybody just kind of sits at their assigned tables. Kind of weird. But yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Assigned tables that seem to have,
well, you don't actually have assigned tables, but it's, you know how in high school cafeterias everybody has their general area that their groups sit in all the time?
Okay.
It's kind of like that there.
Yeah. That, yikes.
Interesting. All right. So maybe you're a school of 138 and so you were there for an entire year. The weather clearly is cold, but what was the coldest weather that you experienced?
I think negative 51 Fahrenheit, and the wind chill was probably in negative 75 to negative 80.
Can you even go outside at that time?
You don't want to, but you can. And I did.
Oh.
Part of my job.
Yeah.
Wow. And what about warmest weather? We heard over the last year or so that there were some unseasonably and record-breaking temperatures on the Antarctic continent.
Right. So the week before I left, which was back in February, McMurdo, I think we hit like 51 degrees.
Fahrenheit. Okay.
And then
positive 51 degrees.
Yeah,
well, positive. 51 Celsius would be weird.
That would be horrible.
Yeah.
And there was a place up by Palmer Station. I think they hit like 68 degrees on that same week.
Yikes.
That seems really alarming.
It was 68 here this week.
Yeah.
Were there folks there that were scientists that were, I guess, alarmed by this? Did they attribute it to global warming or just really big climate shifts and things like that?
By the time we hit those temperatures, most of the scientists were off continent.
So not a lot of scientists who stick around for the winter months.
No. In fact, usually it's just a couple that stick around and they're doing different kinds of experiments that don't require being outside. So.
Fair enough.
Well, I want to know what the biggest surprise to you was, because, you know, recruiter calls you up. You want to go to Antarctica? Meh, sure. Okay. There's got to be things that really caught you off guard or were new to you.
I think that one of the biggest things that caught me off guard is during the summer, McMurdo Station actually has very little snow because of it's on a volcanic island, and the dirt and rock is actually very, very dark. So it absorbs a ton of sunlight, and it like melts the snow very, very quickly in the summer.
That's surprising.
That was really surprising.
Yeah.
Because we always picture Antarctica as just these big sheets of white with maybe some waddling penguins going by.
Right.
Huh.
And during parts of the summer, we actually have McMurdo Sound, which is open water during parts of the summer.
Right. I knew that. I didn't know you couldn't move the penguins when they go down the road. I keep coming back to that in my head, where I'm in some sort of you're in some sort of vehicle and there's some sort of precipitation and the only thing moving is your windshield wipers for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. It's got kind of
pretty close to that.
Got kind of an experimental film feel to it, now that I think about it. So a question that anybody would ask, or at least somebody like me would ask, is, how was the internet connectivity while you were down there? I knew you were on Facebook a lot, so that there's that.
Yeah. So imagine everyone down there sharing the connection of one phone. So we had about a 20 gig uplink.
Okay.
So during the winter, it wasn't horrible.
Right.
But during the summer, it was basically impossible to get anything serious done. Like being on Facebook, you didn't use standard Facebook.
Right.
They have MBASIC Facebook, which is like 1990s Facebook or whatever the hell. Right. It's basically a step down from mobile Facebook. So It doesn't even auto-update. You have to hit a button to go to the next page.
Yeah, so it's 20 gig. So it's a 20 gigabit uplink, which sounds fairly, you know, fair, and it is fairly beefy, but it's for the entire base, and there's a lot of scientific research going on. So there's there's huge, like, boluses of data going back and forth.
Exactly, and the scientists get priority.
Right, so. Obviously. Right. So good time for command line, I would presume.
Is there anything you miss about Antarctica?
I think there's just a lot of things I miss. The community was amazing down there. You don't get that kind of community anywhere else that I've ever been. I think that's the biggest thing I miss down there.
Could you describe that a little bit more? I'm actually very curious about that.
So, I considered McMurdo Station to be the most socialist place I've ever lived.
Okay.
You had free food, you had free housing, and everybody pitched in to get everything done. And everybody felt reasonably the same level as everybody else. You know, like here back in the States, people tend to look down on food servers and things like that. Back there, food servers are held in high esteem because they provide our food.
They feed you. Yeah.
Yes. And that is very important.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. Everybody understands that everybody else has a job to do, and they're appreciated for doing that job.
Kind of a neat culture that certainly we haven't experienced or seen up here stateside.
Right.
What about, dare I ask, religion and politics?
There is a chapel. And it is run during the summer as a chapel, but during the winter, it's basically just a general gathering place. We don't have a chaplain in the winter. And the chaplain is provided by the Air Force. So it's the Air Force chaplains. Religion itself is not really a big deal down there. People tend to not talk much about it. I mean, in your individual social circles, yeah, you'll talk about it. But in general, it's not a big deal.
Hmm. So would you say that it's an atheistic place or just a pluralistic place?
More pluralistic. I think more secular is really what it is. There's just no focus on religion like there is here in the States.
Hmm.
That's nice. All right. One last question for me. So I know McMurdo is famous for having or at least among the increasingly shrinking number of ham radio people, for having an amateur radio station. Was it active anytime you were there over the last year?
It is on and working, but no one had a ham license there, so no one could use it.
Oh, dang.
Which I've been debating on getting my ham license for when I go back.
So you are going back. That was going to be sort of our closing question. What are your plans for returning?
I'm going back. I've already signed my contract. I'm going back in September through February.
Wow.
All right.
Anything that you're going to do differently this time around? I imagine you had limited options for what you could bring.
Right. So I left a bunch of my clothing down there, so I don't have to pack as much of that because we're only allowed 85 pounds.
Okay.
So I can bring more personal gear. Like I plan on bringing a better microphone this time and, you know, just better stuff.
I remember at some point you had a failure of your charger for your laptop, and it was quite a feat trying to hack together something that would do the trick or wait for a replacement.
Actually, it was worse than a charger. My motherboard fried.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. After I was there for about 2 weeks, and the static electricity that builds up down there is so horrible that the Ethernet, when I went to hook up the Ethernet, it literally arced over and fried my motherboard.
Wow. And the Ethernet ports usually have some protection against static discharge. So it had to be a big enough.
Yes.
It had to be a big enough charge to defeat that. Yikes. Okay.
Yeah. So I ended up having to order another laptop, which made it there. It took about a month because we were in between planes and I was just happy to get a laptop. But I did order a beefier one that could hold up to the stuff. It was also like a rebuilt one. So,
yeah.
So a month in between planes, what's usually the frequency of people and supplies in and out?
So during the summer, there is a plane almost every other day, depending on weather. Simply because we have the air guard down there and we have the LC-130 flying, plus, you know, a bunch of other planes going in and out. So our supplies come in that way, but we also get a resupply vessel every January. So, which is, you know, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand tons of supplies that come in, and then a couple hundred thousand tons of waste that goes out.
Right.
And during the winter, it gets a little more difficult because after February, the regular flights stop, and you get a flight in March, a flight in April, a flight in June, then you get four flights in August, three in September, and then they start back up in late October for regular flights.
This is pretty cool. This is one of those things where I stop, where it comes difficult for me to just be the interview guy, and I just want to know stuff, and it sort of throws me off for the questions I would ask. But if people want to follow your adventures or whatnot, where would I send them?
So you could go to sparkyonice.xyz. That's my website for that. And nice. It's a podcast on Spreaker, and I do a few videos here and there on YouTube.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, that's where I will send people. Robert Ray has been a frequent guest on Ask an Atheist over the years. He's a humanist celebrant, podcaster, father, and electrician who is recently back to the U.S. after spending a year at Antarctica. Thanks for talking to us about Antarctica.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on for that.
Yeah. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll do a little bit of news just to keep things normal. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. See you in a minute. Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. With me is Becky and Robert, again, still. We're going to talk some news now, or at least a news. A Texas preacher advertised that he would be holding a car-anointing fire tunnel on Easter Sunday, where church staff would deliver packaged communion and healing Passover balms to drivers and passengers participating in the anointed procession. Footage from so-called Apostle Chuck Pierce's Facebook page showed cars proceeding through the Global Sphere Center church parking lot, flanked by individuals wearing surgical masks and gloves and waving crimson flags. Nothing appears to have combusted during the event. Boy, you had some fun writing this brief, didn't you?
So much fun writing this brief because, okay, there's a few things you have to know about this. Car anointing fire tunnel is in all caps.
Yeah.
And the image was definitely these flames, right, from everywhere. There were no flames to be had when you actually went to witness the event. It's people stopped in line at a parking lot, and then you have all of these really clinical looking individuals, because they're all behind masks and gloves, handing out these like tinfoil like communion packages, and also healing Passover balms. That's BALMS, not explodey bombs. So that was a distinction that doesn't quite come across over the microphone. But it was just, as someone with a background in Passover celebration, I have no idea what do coconut oil scented, you know, things have to do with Passover. I don't get it. And the so-called fire through this anointing parade.
No, it's not Passover.
Oh, well, it's during Passover now, but he called them Passover balms, and this is Passover weekend.
Oh, got it. Okay.
He mentions a bunch of Yeshua, which is like Hebrew for Jesus, but he doesn't look to be quite
not one of the Jews,
a messianic
for Jesus.
Jews for Jesus. Like, it was so bizarre, and it was really disappointing just to see a bunch of like red bed sheets being waved like Toro, Toro, you know?
I'm disappointed for the no flames or actual bombs. That would be fun.
Well, that's just it. I'm expecting, like, how hard would it be to get a couple of tanks and some gas line, poke some holes in it and have, you know, and play,
whoosh,
you know, just a little bit of drive your car through the hula hoop of flame, the anointing hula hoop. They should
Evil Knievel.
Yeah, just Evil Knievel it. They should already have these things for those motorcycle blessings that they do.
Right.
Like, this is a thing that should exist. This is a place where I would have to say, yeah, good one, religion. But no! No, it's gotta be sheets and oil. Why is it always sheets and oil? What is it with sheets and oil? With religion, I don't get it.
One of the guys that was doing a Facebook watch, you know, Facebook Live thing, it's raining right now in Denton, Texas, or it rained today on Easter Sunday. And he said, "Hallelujah, the sun broke through the clouds. There's our holy flame." And I was like, what? What? So everyone else that went through the anointing parade beforehand didn't get the flame? Everyone else behind you?
So if I call the sun like my evil soul destroying flame, do we have to like fight? Does like some Final Fantasy thing happen? And I call Bahamut or whatever, and then I win and the sun is evil?
If there be this showdown, I will show up in my mask and gloves and film it all.
That's fairly Final Fantasy if you think about it. Like that's pretty thematic, especially if you know, your mask turns into like an animal or something like that.
Yeah. Robert,
that's so weird.
Any crazy kind of weird Easter things going on in Montana?
Not that I know of. We're kind of isolated here too, so pretty much everything is shut down.
Okay.
I'm assuming there's people in church somewhere, but here's the weird thing about Montana. They tend to keep to themselves and they don't really care what you think about them.
Nice.
That's nice. That's really nice. Nothing. I said nothing. Also, I like that this guy's name is Apostle Chuck Pierce.
Yes.
That's pretty great. Do you guys remember that commercial that took the internet by storm? The taxidermy guy, Chuck Testa?
No.
And it just reminds me of that, where you gotta go find it. It's the weirdest thing. But I'm just imagining, like Chuck, like it sells used religions is what he sounds like. This baby's got 2,500 years on the clock. And then there's like some dude walking on water. Hey, is that Jesus? Nope. Chuck Pierce. What's that?
I was going to say, it is kind of odd that he's mashing up a couple different religions going on there.
Well, he doesn't claim to be from a specific religion. He and his followers are in the apostolic tradition, who are merely followers of Jesus.
So they're Christians. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the ad that Becky's showing me the ad right now, and it looks like an ad for Buffalo Wings. Like I would expect like I see that and I'm thinking, well, I can't go right now, coronavirus, but man, I could totally go for those wings. Oh, wait, no, it's sheets and oil, not wings.
Well, that's how they make buffalo wings.
Actually, that's probably
sheets of oil.
Yeah, I was going to say that might actually be slightly healthier than what buffalo wings actually are, now that I think about it. I might do better on that one. But I think that's all the time we got for today. We gotta get moving. So, Robert, to send people to see what you're up to with Antarctica and whatnot, I would send them to sparkyonice.xyz.
That is correct.
Great. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. You can go to our website at askanatheist.radio, or no, sorry, atheist.radio, askanatheist.tv will take you there, but that's our old one. Our email address is questions@atheist.radio. Our phone number is 844-753-7842. Our Twitter is askanatheistwa, and I'm going to be very careful. See you next week, not tomorrow, because I keep making that mistake.
That's your other show.
That's
Sam.
My other show. All right. See you then. Yay!